If you can get people thinking about what's possible, you'll often find a new solution to a problem you couldn't solve in the past. So can't is a word I want out of the vocabulary, frankly, of the organization. Instead, it's just, I don't know how to do it yet. I don't have the right solution yet. We're not growing share yet. We don't have the results that we want yet. But then it opens up, how are we gonna make whatever it is we need to address, how are we gonna address it effectively?
Hi, this is Stefan Hohmeister. Welcome to today's LightWolf podcast. Purpose, as always, is to share inspiration and ideas on the topics of strategy and leadership, on how to lead yourself and others to sustainable success and fun. Now, today's edition is very, very special. Throughout my career, I've had 16 different bosses, and I was blessed to have worked for and with many successful leaders. Today, I have the huge pleasure to have a conversation with a man who left a great mark on my life, who was my boss for 3 years, a man for whom I would walk through fire. It's my pleasure to introduce David Taylor. Dear David, in the name of about 10,000 regular listeners and possibly a six-digit audience today, including current and former P&Gers, a warm welcome to the LightWolf podcast.
Thank you very much, Devin. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to talk with you again.
Great. David enjoys a tremendous career in the consumer goods industry and holds one of the most influential roles in the corporate world. For 5 years, he has been leading Procter & Gamble, a company whose products are in the homes of almost 5 billion consumers right now. David led an impressive business turnaround over the last 3 years. He is chairman of the board and chief executive officer of Procter & Gamble, board member at Delta, and chairman of the nonprofit organization Alliance to End Plastic Waste. At least as significant as his business achievements has been David's success in addressing the world's most pressing societal issues, including being a good citizen in the communities where P&G operates. When we last met in person this February in Geneva, David, you shared how you personally get involved and are leading fundraising campaigns for the United Way and the Free Store Food Bank in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, having worked for you for years, I could share a long, long list of great things you have done as my boss to give me orientation, motivation, connection, and confidence. For me, you are a true role model for highest integrity, strong values, true listening, and active inclusion of all kinds of diversity you can think of. Now, today is all about you. It's all about your absolutely outstanding leadership experience, David. And I would like to get us started with an excellent quote I recently read in your LinkedIn account, summing up perfectly one of your core leadership beliefs that you exercised with me. It is the quote, "I can't yet." I absolutely love it. I full-heartedly agree with it. And I'd love to start by asking my first question, David. Now, reading this quote, "I can't yet," where does it come from, David?
For Stefan, this one was coming from, the actual quote comes from an individual named David Rock. Dr. David Rock teaches a course called Growth Mindset, and it's one that I really like. And arguably, it's been my mindset for many, many years, but he puts it in such an elegant way. And it's just about helping people have a mindset to see opportunities versus a fixed mindset that frankly sees barriers. And all of us in different settings have a fixed or a growth mindset. But the whole point is many people say they can't. And what it does is it closes down creativity. Instead of finding solutions, you've kind of given up. And if you can flip it and add one word, when someone says, you know, you've got a tough task, I can't do that, you say, yet. What it does then is it triggers the thoughts. Well, if it's yet, that means I probably can. I need to think of new options, new alternatives to find a way to address that challenge. And it opens up, frankly, the mind. There's even work done understanding how the brain operates. And if you can open doors, then people start thinking of new options. And what I want in our company, and frankly, in any area group that I work with, is for all of us to be open-minded and see possibilities. Barriers are always in front of us. Many people focus on the barrier and it stops them. That's the can't. Instead, if you can get can't out of the vocabulary and say, I can't do it yet, or I don't know how to do it yet, then all of a sudden you or others, you can engage others into thinking of alternatives or options to address the issue, and it opens up possibilities. And as you know, in a company like P&G, where we're blessed with so many smart, talented people, if you can get people thinking about what's possible, you'll often find a new solution to a problem you couldn't solve in the past. So can't is a word I want out of the vocabulary, frankly, of the organization. Instead, it's just, I don't know how to do it yet. I don't have the right solution yet. We're not growing share yet. We don't have the results that we want yet. But then it opens up, how are we gonna make whatever it is we need to address, how are we gonna address it effectively?
Yeah, I love it. You've done it with me by just putting me into assignments that were always a little bigger than at first I thought I'd be able to handle, but I just felt you trust me, so that gave me confidence to just rock and roll and run the assignment. What are the little things you do in your daily work to really broaden, share, and promote this mindset?
Well, first, you start with very talented people, and you know yourself and frankly many other people I've had the opportunity to work with have tremendous capability. We hire people that have a history of achievement. And then they come into a new setting. And again, many times they haven't addressed that specific issue or worked on that brand or that brand country combination, yourself included. But if you look at the talent, the skill, the capability, the ability to work with people and lead, then it's a question just focusing it and recognizing if you're not a little uncomfortable, you're probably not growing. And certainly with individuals like yourself, when you give someone a broader responsibility than they think they can handle, but support them and trust them, and what happens almost all the time is they grow into the opportunity. And they also see that they can't address it without some help. And what you end up doing is you make connections with other people. You work with your counterparts in the market or other colleagues in other functions, but you accomplish the outcome. And what we all learn, to me, that the strongest leaders learn, it's not about being right, it's about getting the right thing done. You don't have to do it yourself. You just have to see that it gets done. And frankly, it's very freeing not to have to know everything or do everything yourself, but yet to and find a way to get it done. And frankly, you did that effectively. When you had a broader responsibility, you found a path to get it done. Whether you did it or you did it with other people, frankly, that doesn't matter. In many cases, you want to empower a broader group of people. So to me, assignment planning or giving people broader responsibilities, one of the best ways to allow people to grow into the capacity, frankly, they have in them.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I also love this quote. It's not about being right, but getting the right thing done. That's the point. Looking around in this world, some people get it, some are still working on it. But anyway, now let's move to the next question, and it's broad, but still, in tapping into your experience is just gold. For you, for such an accomplished leader, what is the essence of good leadership for you?
If I think about the great leaders that I've worked with, they're people that could work with any group or take a group of people and find a way to constructively achieve good outcomes while building people's capability. And to me, when you do that, whether it's a small group or a big group, the actions that you need to take are often very similar. It's things like enrolling people in a strategy, finding ways to help engage them so that you have their full self, their mind, their heart into the task at hand, and then finding ways to energize and help them execute. But the essence is that you see a very clear outcome. So you've got a vision of what you want to accomplish, and then you see in the collective group that you have the capability, and then you help create the conditions where that capability can be transformed into delivering a great outcome. And to me, done well, people see themselves in it. They take great, frankly, satisfaction out of making things happen that they didn't think they could do individually or even collectively. And to me, leaders are able to elevate the outcome of a group, elevate the output of a group in ways that cause the folks to learn and then be able to repeat it in the future. because in a company like P&G that's been around for over 183 years, getting good results this quarter doesn't matter as much as being able to sustain excellence over time. And to do that, you have to believe in people and create capability to be able to repeat it. We're not a one-trip wonder. We're a company that has to satisfy the $5 billion, and we want even more each year, every year. We want it every day. People buy P&G products, and they have to be better and better. In order to do that, you need people that are constantly innovating. And it's about creating the set of conditions where people, you can unleash the creative capabilities of people in a directed way to achieve a constructive outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, David. So, David, one of the things I often discover and recognize is that it's very easy to talk about leadership, but it's much harder to do it. People get it in theory, but the hard thing is not thinking about it or talking about it. I think the hard thing is to do it, then to do it well, then to do it consistently well, and ideally to do it consistently well even under pressure. Now, based on your experience, what makes it hard to lead well at all and to lead consistently well even under pressure?
To me, it's most difficult when under pressure, because under pressure you're often questioning yourself, and you have to put the needs of the organization ahead of your own insecurities. And it's hard. In many ways, the best leaders I've worked with have a level of humility and self-awareness that allows them to move past, to me, the pressure and not transfer it to people, but instead to understand the environment and then to help focus the group and give them the support to be able to accomplish, to me, great outcomes. My view has been for years that in times of great pressure is when you need to give the greatest support to the organization. When times are good is when you can turn up, frankly, and not pressure as much of the expectations. But when others are feeling the pressure, to me, it closes down creativity and you don't get the kind of solutions that deliver great outcomes. So it's hard to lead well because people feel if times are tough or the results aren't strong, I need to put more pressure. I need to be stronger. In many ways, it's to understand that if you've got the talent and you start with great people and you've got a clear strategy, but the results aren't strong, then understand what is causing that. And in many cases, it's people are getting more and more safe and conservative because they're feeling the pressure and you're conveying that to them, or collectively the environment is. And the more you can express confidence, clarity in the choices, and give people the support, then when you find the group generally can rise to the occasion and get through it. You know, we've gone through at P&G a number of years of not outstanding results. When I came into the role 5 years ago, we had had a number of years that were rocky, bumpy. We went through a proxy contest where, frankly, P&G was questioned. But if you step back and you have the belief in your people, a very clear strategy, then it's about mobilizing the people in order to focus on those things within our control and make sequential progress. Don't overpromise, but support your people. And what happened was the P&G people stepped up and they stepped forward and started delivering better and better. Each semester was better than the previous. And what's happened is we've gotten better for the last 3.5-4 years to the point we just had our best year in 10 years. And it's because of the P&G people have the capability. Collectively, the leadership needed to clarify the strategy, and that was really important, a clear set of choices that when taken together and executed well, would win in the marketplace. Once we had that, we had to work with the organization to address things that were getting in the way. And when the pressure was significant and intense in a proxy contest, the last thing they needed was more pressure from the top. What they needed was clarity and support and confidence to move forward. And that's what collectively, to me, the leadership team did. I give the credit to the P&G people and the broad leadership that worked together to have confidence in the people, understand and bring the strategy to life in a way that served consumers and worked with our customers in a way that was mutually beneficial.
Yeah, awesome. I can just echo this, David, from my own time with you, particularly when I'm working in transformation projects and helping leadership teams of companies to transform to the right next level of their leadership capabilities. One of the things I share is my own beliefs, and it includes energy. And it's both in the positive sense, i.e. creating energy, creating positive energy, but also helping organizations to reduce stress. And again, it's an opportunity where I often cite you, because whenever I came into your office, I came with a certain energy level, and I always left it with more energy than going in. Yeah? And I've never seen you stressed. You may be stressed because it's human, but I've never felt it. Yeah? And like you say, humans mirror human behavior. And one of the things I always enjoyed is you never increased the stress. You always tried to take it out. And I think your analogy of businesses and organizations in trouble stressing out themselves is a great one, where in my view, some people tend to just share stress and increase the problem, while I agree with you, the right thing is to do the exact opposite, to take stress out of it. Yeah? Awesome.
And the other thing that I do see in this, which I think is really important, is in stressful times, or when the results aren't strong or somebody's behavior is not right, some individuals attack the individual and they hit the person's self-confidence. Instead of addressing the behavior and helping somebody change the behavior, but believe in the individual. You can be a talented leader that made a mistake, and we can talk about the behavior that led to the mistake and how we can change it. Or I can say you're not a good leader. One addresses, frankly, your self-confidence, your self-esteem, and it's to be demotivating. The other is recognizing you're much better than that, and let's find the way to address either the behavior or the choice that was made to get to a better outcome. And if you believe in your people, and certainly when you have talented leaders like yourself and many others I've had the opportunity to work with, it's typically about we made a choice that didn't work, or our behavior in that instance wasn't what was needed. We can change both of those things and get to a much better outcome, but I believe in the individual. And to me, that builds confidence, and then we move to a solution versus wallowing in the problem.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah? Completely agree. To separate between the individual in general and the personality and the negative impact it can have on confidence, and on the other hand, a behavior. We are all humans. We do make mistakes. Yeah. Thank you very much. Now, different question. Zooming out a little into a macro view into the topic of leadership. I have observed two fundamental facts over the last two decades that I think influence the massive change that I perceive. Here they are. First, the first thing I call decision density. In a German newspaper in 2016, I saw a publication which says, "You, David, on this very day, you're taking four times as many decisions as the same David in the same role 20 years ago. Four times as many decisions every single day." I think one of the key things that enables this is information technology. It gives you better information. It gives you almost any information you want. It's all about picking the right one, concentrating it well, so that you can make those many decisions more every single day, but four times as many. I didn't perceive it because it all came in small increments, but I find it a plausible statement, which is backed by research, to say information decision density has quadrupled over the last two decades. Now, the other one, which is very unfortunate and sometimes makes me sad, is the fact that over the same time, the burnout rates have more than tripled, which I interpret as more and more individual leaders no longer being able to cope with the pressure that comes from this pace, this speed. Yeah? I have two of those chief executives in my own customer portfolio, and I'm very glad. Both of them run companies between 10 and 20,000 people. Both of them were out for four, respectively 8 weeks, and both came back stronger than before. So I'm glad they are back. But it's an issue. Now, these are two of the things that changed in the leadership world. Now, taking your view, when you look at the leadership world and you look ahead, what do you expect will stay the same, what stays as is, and what will change in successful leadership?
To me, what stays the same are the principles and values that underpin the set of choices that I make as a leader. I don't see that changing. You're right. I think it's a very good observation on decision density. I think it's a very real observation on There's the data on the burnout factor that you're talking about. But again, to me, it doesn't have to be that way. And again, if I take the personal experiences I've had within P&G, is we don't see, for instance, much higher attrition today than we did before. Not seeing that. To me, it gets down to, again, the set of choices that the leader makes and what kind of environment they create for the people that they work with. To the extent the leadership, and not just the leader, but the leadership can pick or choose a very clear strategy, or develop really a clear strategy engaging others that adds clarity. And clarity to me allows us then to pick the few things that when taken together and executed well will give us an advantage in the marketplace. And with all this information coming at you, and in many cases, people then turn that into complex documents and complex organization designs and complex strategies. And to me, that frustrates, and that complexity is one of the biggest disablers in organizations. If you can flip it and get down to a few key choices, i.e. if you focus on these three or five things, execute them well, with strong support, we can achieve good outcomes. One of those is agility and speed. You don't have agility and speed when you're trying to figure out something really complex. If you can break it down to the three things we need to do today is we need to have a superior product and package that delights the consumer. We need to have a level of productivity that allows us to generate the savings to invest in that. And we need to create an environment that people feel able to perform at their peak. Then we're going to be able to win. Now, what do I need to do? What do you need to do to make that come to life in your country category combination? And to me, part of our role, the leader's role, is not to try to impress people with all they know, is to go to the reverse, is try to bring it down to some things that are manageable, that enable people to go act in a way that creates a constructive outcome, the desired outcome. And I do believe leadership gets more and more challenging if you try to know everything. It gets back to something I said earlier. With all this four times as much information coming at you, if you try to do it all yourself, one, you will burn yourself out, which is to me, it's not surprising there's a burnout rate. The flip is an enabler where you can still have a relatively balanced life is to recognize that you've got this tremendous access of people. You've got both the employees and in our cases, we have suppliers and many other people that we work with, partners that can help us. If you get back to, we need to accomplish this versus I need to accomplish this, get I out of it and get we into it. All of a sudden, to me, you can break down complex things into manageable tasks and then take action. And that I think is one of the biggest challenges. And one of the other ones is to recognize in a diverse environment, which many of us find ourselves in, how do you create the culture that frankly sees difference as an advantage, a chance to learn and to capture a new set of skills that can be brought to bear against the challenge at hand? And to me, those leaders that are able to take complexity and bring it down to something that they can address and take a diverse organization and see that as an opportunity and harness all the capability that exists are the ones that are going to be able to turn this complex environment into, to me, very constructive or very desirable outcomes.
Yeah, completely agree. Thank you. Now, a little bit of a historical question. Looking at you, it's hard to believe, but it's true, I think. You've been with P&G for around almost 40 years. It's amazing. Now, for many of us who have been in the company or are serving P&G and its consumers right now, and for anyone else, it's a great opportunity to get your view here, looking over such a long time span. So if you think back to the P&G you joined as a young man four decades ago, in a nutshell, what characterized P&G at the time? What is the most important one thing about P&G that remained the same? And has there been anything that evolved or changed over those four decades?
The short answer is what's remained the same are two things: our purpose, values, and principles, and a focus on serving the consumer. When we do those well, then we tend to stay focused. And our belief is the two things you must have to do that well is great people and great brands, because people are the, frankly, the greatest resource to bring it to life, and are the brands or articulation to the consumers we serve. Because ultimately, that's all they see. They see the brand that they buy and the experience they have. But if you think about our purpose, values, and principles, and a focus on serving the consumer, working with people and brands, and frankly, innovation is the translation of all that capability and people to our brands. That's been pretty consistent throughout what is now just past 40 years. How to do that has changed dramatically. The level of complexity, the scope has changed dramatically from when I started out as a shift team manager in a manufacturing plant in 1980 to now as the CEO of a company of about 100,000 people that is over 70 billion US in sales. That's changed scope, but how to accomplish desired outcomes hasn't changed dramatically. It's been about doing that. How do you do, you take great people, create a culture that empowers them, a strategy of very clear choices, brands to bring that to life to the consumers, and outstanding execution every day in every country on every brand. That formula to me works. How to do that and the many things that come at us has changed significantly. The technology to do so, the tools that we have developed tremendously, but it's about people, culture, strategy, brands, and execution. And to me, that's been pretty consistent. And I try not to get to make things more complex than they need to, and try to get down to how do you take a group of individuals that have great talent, and how do we collectively accomplish, to me, outstanding results? And what I'd want the outcome to be is sustained excellence in a way that builds organizational capacity.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Now, when you think about your time in your most senior leadership roles, including particularly your current role as the CEO of the company, what key changes did you instill in P&G's leadership culture over the last years?
There are a few areas that I believed, and frankly, collectively, the leadership team I worked with believed needed to change. We had over time, and if you go back a little walk down history, through 2000 to 2010, and frankly, up to even 2000, we had acquired a number of brands. We were up to, if you take about 2014, we were up to maybe 17 categories, almost 200 brands, over 100 countries, and our results weren't outstanding. In fact, they weren't strong in our industry. And so the first choice that was really made by my predecessor was to start to focus the portfolio to 10 categories, about 65 brands. Then, as I was coming in, the next challenge was, now that we had a focused portfolio, we had to address, to me, a couple fundamental issues. One, we had become too centralized to try to manage all of those brands. So number one was to decentralize to some degree and get to a better balance. And that included, and one of the fundamental changes is, pick one organizing principle for our company. Stefan, you remember when you were with us, we had businesses, we call them global business units, we had market teams, and we had functions, and all of them had, quote unquote, a lot of power and decision space, and there was a lot of negotiation. The functions managed talent, the businesses had profit, but the markets had the sales force, and there was just a lot of internal work to make things happen. And we said, we're going to pick one organizing principle, and that's the business. We will organize the entire company around the business. We moved talent planning into the organizational unit. You didn't have to get the approval of the functional leader. You wanted their advice and their mastery, but one organizing principle is one of the fundamental changes we made. And to me, because we needed to have agility and clarity. We needed all this great capacity to turn their capability to win outside, not to be negotiating inside. That was one. Now, to enable that, the next change we really had to make was we needed disaggregated data. Instead of what is the global baby care share, I want to know what Pampers is in Germany this quarter. And then we can get down to what specifically to address on that specific brand. So the reports that I got, instead of having this aggregate data, I wanted to have the top 50 brand country combinations every month that I could see. Who was growing share, who has grown household penetration, any change in the price environment, is the market growing? So you can start to get to very specific questions, because we needed to get accountability back at the level it needed to be, which is the people that were closest to the consumer and the customer. So now if you've got a focused portfolio, and then you've now got an organization that's more agile, you've got information systems that allow you to see that and ask questions and recognize great performance. Then we moved into addressing some of the other issues that were challenging the company, which is the level of expectation we had of ourselves. We need to raise the bar, which is our aspirations to be in the top third and ideally the best performing consumer product company in the world. And so what's happened is we continue to raise the expectation of what we're capable of. And underpinning all that was a articulation of a strategy that everybody should be able to frankly recite. We understand what it is, and it's very clear. Focused portfolio, superiority across products, packages, go-to-market, our go-to-market capability, how we communicate and value, productivity in every cost bucket, enabled by an engaged, accountable organization. And when we do that, to me, we're able to perform. And if you looked at what's happened, the company's performing. And then we said, there was one other thing to keep it dynamic. We said, we want to encourage and frankly embrace constructive disruption, which is we have to disrupt ourselves and be better before everybody else. So we looked at each area of our business. How do we disrupt the way we buy media in a way that's constructive, that creates value for us and our stakeholders? How do we disrupt the way we do innovation? Instead of big project teams, we want small, fast learning teams, lean innovation. So this idea of constructive disruption keeps us current in every aspect of our business. Those were the key changes, and we're still working on today. And I think we will be 5 years from now, and we'll get better and better because we have the people, the strategy, and the culture to make that happen.
Yeah, great. Now, I think one of the things you said that is constant is PVPs, purpose, values, principles. And still, I can imagine that particularly the purpose, values, and principles may over time get challenged or questioned by particularly younger people coming into the organization. So how do you as the CEO support P&G in remaining consistently true to its purpose?
I think it starts by being very clear of what we stand for. And we have been an outspoken company, appropriately outspoken to me, about our belief in our people. We've been clear about our belief in equality, both in our workforce and more broadly. We want to be a constructive contributor in the society. You may or may not have seen some of the films we've put out that share our point of view, and that certainly elicited a response. But all of those films and what we're doing, frankly, and many other aspects that I'll talk about, are just about a deep-seated belief that if you can create the set of conditions that allow people to deliver at high levels, they will. And our effort on quality is recognizing today that there are differences that different groups or cultures or genders experience. And we're best to acknowledge it than work together to try to create a more equal culture or society. And an example would be if you look at the bias that may exist in many industries, and one of them that we've been working with is advertising. If the vast majority of the directors and the people behind the camera are men, then you're not getting the benefit of the broad society. So we said we would like to work with companies that have a diverse workforce behind the camera. And when we have people depicted in advertising, we want to depict them in a way that's much more realistic and representative of real life. And we've tried to do that both in front and behind the camera. We do the same thing in each aspect of our business, but it's just the deep-seated belief that we hire talented people. And if there's any clear evidence that any group is not developing, then we want to address it.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Now, a little more personal, depending on your own view, your experience, would you mind sharing a tough leadership issue that you experienced and how you solved it?
Of course, I didn't solve it, but the toughest leadership issue in the last few years was when we had the proxy contest, and broadly, people were questioning our company. You'd see everything from big brands are dead to big companies can't compete because we're in an environment where there were startups in almost every one of our categories. Our results weren't strong, and a major investor was challenging the company and was highlighting some of the issues and was making some comments that were certainly getting widely reported. And the confidence of the company certainly was shaken at the time. And so collectively, the leadership got together and said, what are the things we can go do to address that which was in our control? And what came out of that is just a rearticulation of the strategy, belief in the company. We went broadly to a wide range of investors. We worked with our board that was terrific in supporting the company and moved through that. But it was a challenge that we had to support the company, support the people, reinforce our values, not do things that would be expedient to maybe, you know, cost control. Somebody asked me at one point in time, you know, Wall Street would love it if you declared you're going to, you know, reduce 10,000 people. Yeah. So we're not going to do that because that's not the objective. Our objective is balanced top and bottom line growth in a way that's sustainable, that serves our consumers and customers. Yeah. And we acted that way. And what came of that is you can see now each semester we've gotten better. The individual that ran the proxy fight on the other side, the investor, we brought on our board and we get along great. Nelson Peltz is a member of our board. If you had Nelson on this podcast, he'd have very good things to say about our company and the quality of people and the results the company's delivering. Our board has done a really, to me, fine job of representing the shareholders, but also recognizing the mid to long-term potential of our company. And today, we're a much more viable company than we were when some people were calling for things like whether it's breakup or other to me, actions that would be very short-term and destructive for the company's long-term future.
Yeah. This must have been a very tough part of your career. Running the company, being responsible for the whole company, and being challenged in that way. Did you experience any really tough moments as an individual, as a leader, in these times?
Oh, for sure. And many would say, if this doesn't go well, David, you may be out of a job. I haven't had many times in my career where you're truly wondering whether you had both the skills and the support to do what was needed. I remain very appreciative of the board because they remain supportive, and of the team around me that supported me during that time. Because collectively, we had to come together because we were, for the first time in my career, truly being questioned publicly for the quality of leadership, whether the P&G system of developing from within really worked. Many of the things that I considered core to who we were as a company were being questioned.
I agree. I'd never seen that before. I have never seen that being challenged before, as far as I could think back.
Yeah. And I haven't in my 40 years to the level that it was at the time. And the fact that it was a very public proxy contest. It was on the news. It was being widely reported. It was reported how much money was being spent. We were both sides sending out things to the shareholders. So you have millions of documents and email messages running around. And it wasn't what we wanted to focus on. We want to focus on developing world-class products that delight our consumers. But yet the narrative was around the proxy contest. And to me, many stakeholders were engaged in that. And the challenge was to not let that be a distraction, because the best solution was to deliver strong results. If the leadership could come together with our broad employee base and deliver sequentially better results, that was the anecdote, not to do any short-term actions that may mollify, you know, any stakeholder. And again, to the credit of the board, they took action to bring Nelson on the board. Nelson, to his credit, joined the board as a constructive board member. And then the rest has been history, which is, instead of vilifying either side, we worked together to serve the broad stakeholder community, not just our shareholders, the broad stakeholder community, including we did not do widespread layoffs. We did not break the company up. Instead, what we did was made choices that created value for the long term for the many stakeholders we serve. Yeah. But it was a very challenging period of time and many experiences that I'd never experienced before.
Yeah, and the results are impressive. Man, the turnaround is impressive, and I've seen charts, I've seen people, I've seen in the P&G alumni meeting in Madrid in October, I've seen people, I've seen leaders of your group CEOs, your sector CEOs, presenting charts where you see 10 countries out of 10 growing top and bottom line and growing equity consistently throughout. I mean, the consistency of strong performance P&G is delivering over the last 2 years is absolutely stunning and impressive. So congratulations on this. Really well done to everyone.
The congratulations truly, truly belong. And it's not, to me, it shouldn't be understated. It's the employees, the 99,000 people stepped up. Instead of being discouraged, they stepped up and addressed it. And the leadership came together as a team focused on one thing, which is collectively we had to get the company moving in a way that created value for our many stakeholders, serving consumers and customers. It built my confidence even further in not passing on pressure, but supporting people so that they can empower them to take action. We needed greater creativity during that time, not people clamping down because they were doing safe things. And to me, that's where the constructive disruption just blossomed.
Yeah, agree. Another part, another facet of this big topic called leadership. Two of the red threads I see going through the topic are purpose, and we've talked about that. I think this is in the DNA of P&G and in your DNA. The other one is courage. And honestly, it has to do with fear and overcoming fears. Now, the only people on this planet who scare me are the ones who say, I'm not scared of anything. If I think of my elder son, Niels, 20 years, he is a mountaineer. He loves mountain climbing. Last year, he did 11 peaks of more than 4,000 meters in 4 days, together with an American friend and a guide. When I asked the guide, now, are you scared? Had he responded, I'm not scared of anything, I'm sure I would not have let him go. But he admitted that having fear is just normal and that he was obviously also respectful of the mountains that they were going to climb. So fear is human. Everyone has it, including you and me. And it's important to be courageous and to have courage. Because I think great leaders are scared too and at times need courage, but they don't allow their own fears to prevent them to doing what's right. And what you need to do so is having courage. And one of the things I learned is courage is like a muscle. You can practice it and you can grow it by doing exactly what you're scared of. And it's related to your concept of the growth zone. Yeah, the comfort zone is when I think I'm capable of everything already. I'm going to succeed, but for sure I'm not growing. Courage is like a muscle you can train. Now, one of the key, the highest art, I think, one of the highest arts of leadership is helping others develop more courage, developing their own courage. So how do you help others develop courage, David?
It's a great question, and it's one I think, again, we're all students in. To me, there's a word called encourage to me, which is to give courage to someone else. The way that I try to do that, the way that I think is helpful, is to give a level of support and trust that allows someone to take on something that they don't believe they can handle, that they may be fearful of. And if you can remove the worst consequence, which is, I will disappoint my boss, I will fail, and your boss says, I want you to do this, I'm here to support you, let's talk about how you're going to approach it. As long as it's a thoughtful approach, then let's go for it. And you've got my full support. In many ways, you de-risk the task because you have the support of the boss. When it's tough to do is when you think there's something right, but you're not sure, and your boss says, you better get it right, or it's your job. Yeah. And you've experienced some people that says this one's on you. What you've done is you've increased the pressure, and to me that closes down the creativity. What you want to do in a really challenging time is you want to give courage. How do you create the opportunity? But it has to be reasoned. It's not to me without good thought. But the idea of working with someone to give them courage by helping to understand and de-risk it in a way that allows them to move forward. Ultimately, if I'm vulnerable and you're vulnerable and we can then learn together, we're likely going to be more creative. We can likely find solutions that we may not have been able to find independently. And then you go in with, to me, a greater degree of confidence because you have the trust and support of your boss. And when teams aren't moving forward, it's often, again, they're getting risk adverse and safe. And that, and they may not be also agile, fast. And in today's marketplace, that may be the primary reason they're failing, is they're doing the right things, not fast enough. And why is that? They're being safe. And part of that to me is people need to be given courage, support, and high expectations. And when that happens to me, I've seen countless times of teams then excelling and individuals excelling.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Great segue to my next question, because you just said we are doing the right things, but not fast enough. Yeah, I think one of the other observations I make is 30 years ago, my impression was that in the corporate world, we treated money as the scarcest resource. And I'm not naive. Business is about making money, and money still matters today. But nowadays, I think the balance between money and time as resources has slightly shifted. Often my impression now is that time is the scarcest resource. And your statement of we are doing the right thing, but not fast enough, I think hits it on the spot for many people, for many companies in the world right now. Yeah? It's also shifting decision-making mantras from, for instance, I'm never in a hurry to make a bad decision, to better fast than perfect. Yeah, I think nowadays only few decisions, like an M&A decision or a personal recruitment decision, they should be 99% right, close to perfection. But almost any other decision is probably better taken at 85 or 90% quality rather than at 99, because then it's too late. And the segue is to systems. Is to leadership systems. I once had a Lightwolf podcast interview with another very, very successful individual who said, you know, Stefan, when I look back at my career and when I criticized people, in hindsight, I realized I was almost every single time I was wrong in criticizing the individual, because the mistake was not in the individual, but it was in the system we put around them. Now, from another conversation, a very blunt quote, if you put fences around people, you raise sheep, right? So it is important that every leader, and I think you start when you're young, you start with your first leadership role, you start with your first little team, because then your role starts to become to also work on the system rather than only in the system. So it's important that you put the right leadership systems in place that measure the right leadership competencies and behaviors. Like in your case, turning around P&G to a stunning performance, your concept of accountability, looking at the top 50 category country combinations and making sure that the person who is accountable gets empowered to take the right action. That's a systematic change. Yeah? And you get what you measure. Therefore, it is important to put the right leadership measures and the right leadership systems into any company to establish the leadership culture it needs to be still around and to be successful in the future. Now, when you think about that topic, i.e. leadership systems, what are your key lessons learned on establishing effective leadership systems in a business?
I think actually you articulated it very, very well. The only thing I'd add to that is a level of clarity and transparency. Once you decide on what are the few metrics that are critically important in our business, it may be sales growth, profit. There's a variety of others that when you break it even further down, household penetration, are you bringing more people into your brand? Are they buying you more often? There's a variety of internal metrics. But once you get clear on those, then it's, do you provide clear, is the data available, and then is action taken if it's strong or not strong? And to me, it reinforces the level of accountability. Again, I really do believe if you start with outstanding people, then if you have systems, I mentioned before, disaggregated data that allows it to be transparent and it doesn't hide issues. In many ways, one of the biggest challenges in big companies is the ability to rationalize poor results because of some reason we're really better than you think they are. Instead of saying, results are what they are. It's a fact. Here's the results. And then let's figure out, put all our energy to change them, make them better, not to justify why they're what they are. And we as much as we could, we tried to say, these are the things that we're going to look for individuals to deliver. Let's give them the support, but then let's be very transparent and direct. One other thing that we worked on the very beginning was something called straight talk. Give people very clear data and feedback on how they're doing. And that's very difficult, you know, in a company like P&G, where we grow up together and you've got a lot of camaraderie and esprit de corps, is people tend to want to be positive. The best way to grow is to give people balanced, clear, specific feedback. Specific, and in many cases, time-bounded and measurable. And people will then act. And certainly that's been my experience.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I love that concept of straight talk. I think too often people are trying to be polite. And in the pursuit of trying to be polite, they are hiding the truth so much that it just gets forgotten or overlooked. I think it's important that we face the truth. It's true. Now, there is one more thing I sometimes hear. And in the last 11 years, I worked with more than 5,000 leaders for at least one day life. As I met a lot of people. And one of the things that comes back at times is the question, well, to be a leader like David Taylor, you need to be born charismatic. You need to be a born leader. Now, question to you, to what extent are leaders born or made?
Certainly, there's probably others that have studied this. My belief is that you can give people experiences and training that will develop people into much stronger leaders than they may have believed they will be. There may be some people that have just innate skills or very high intellects that can capture large amounts of data and translate that better than others. But my belief across, as you know, I've lived in 8 different places, and everywhere I've been, I've seen organizations that can step up and individuals that were doing okay turn into very strong contributors and leaders. And a lot of that is just tapping into the skills and capabilities that they have and creating the set of conditions that unleashes the capability of the organization. So I believe largely this is trainable. I think you want to look at people that want to do the work that you're needing to do. So when I am involved in recruiting, you looked at their history and track record of achievement, but also the fit for the job. Because when you have a combination of highly capable and want to do the work that you have, then to me, you've got at least the raw material to develop people into much stronger leaders than they may have been when they came into the door. So I believe I think you can develop it. And as you know, P&G has got a history of hiring people and developing folks. You know, look at the number of senior leaders across both the consumer products industry and, or more broadly, industry that have been at P&G for a meaningful part of the career. And almost always what you hear is they credit the development they got at P&G. So I think we put limitations on people way too much. I believe strongly that you can develop and unleash tremendous capability in almost everybody we hire.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the capability to lead comes from the willingness to lead. And I think almost anyone who wants to lead and wants to become the best leader she or he can be, can improve. And I can only, in hindsight, full-heartedly agree, P&G was an outstanding leadership and management school. Yeah, it's just terrific. Now, my last question, David. You said a couple of times during this interview that we are learners in this. So, and I know from having worked with you for 3 years, you do have that permanent learner's mindset. Huh? But what are the few most effective things you do to develop yourself as a leader?
There's a process called integrative thinking that has been, it's been best articulated by a guy named Roger Martin, but I think it describes a lot of my belief and how I've developed. I don't have any illusion that when I came into P&G that I had many of the skills and abilities specifically that are needed, but I had the opportunity during my 40-year career to develop the skills and to develop the behaviors that allowed me to take larger roles over time. And the integrative thinking thought is if you and I, if I start out in a trusting relationship with you and I, and you have a different point of view, instead of me trying to win the argument, if I can take the time to truly listen to you, not, you know, pause to speak, waiting to speak, but listen to you and understand, Stefan, why do you believe something differently? And walk down your ladder of inference and understand the data and facts that you accessed to come to that conclusion, I will learn something, and then I will come to a different, they call it a better third way. And out of that, now I've now grown. I haven't got my set of experiences, which are considerable, and the facts that I've learned. But think about it, if I can access your experiences and facts, and if I surround myself with people that are different from me, and I can do the same, and it starts with building a trusting relationship where you truly want to learn from someone else. I've had the chance for 40 years to be trained by everybody that's worked with me and for me. If you take that mindset and you think about that, you're going to a Harvard Business School for 40 years because the people around me went to Harvard and Wharton and this school and that school and Duke and, you know, a great school in Germany or France or whatever. And instead of trying to win arguments, you try to learn to get to a better third way. And then to me, you're constantly being developed. And to me, it's one of the most powerful thoughts, this integrative thinking. Don't win the argument, which is the same notion of instead of being right, do what's right. And for that reason, to me, I'm not trained in marketing. I'm not a classical marketeer. I'm an engineer by training. But then I moved into the marketing organization. But around me were people that were outstanding marketeers. And then I got to learn every day by people that knew more about marketing or sales or market research or product development. But then I grew. As long as you're willing to learn and listen, truly listen to learn, not listen as in waiting to speak, and you trust that the other person has something of value to add versus I need to win the argument. It's a fundamental belief, which means then you're constantly being trained. Now, every day when I interact with my leadership team, if they go, have you thought about that? Especially my board. David, have you thought about that? If I haven't, it's their way of saying you ought to, and let's talk about it instead of saying do something different. But then you're constantly learning. So you develop yourself. And then in addition to that, to me, it is right. Whether you read avidly or right now I'm taking a course at a university on constructive disruption and disruptive innovation, rather. And that's a chance to get more formal education, and that's good. You can do that online. But to me, the most powerful development experiences I've had over time have been with the people that were on the left or right of me or in a small group or having Stefan and a group of people in Europe running a business and people that understood the country, the culture, the customer far better than I, because I parachuted into Europe from Greater China and before that from the U.S. And each place that I went, I knew less than the people that I was being asked to lead. However, collectively, if I could tap into the collective intellect and experiences of my lead team, think about the collective data that I had available to me, then it was about, can you process it and make a choice and then be clear and transparent in the way you communicate that? If so, you're constantly being developed. So I, how do I develop myself is surround myself with people that are smarter than I am, that have a different set of experiences, which is why I believe deeply in diverse organizations and inclusive cultures create the opportunity for outstanding results.
Yeah, that's exactly the David Taylor I had the pleasure to experience for 3 years as my boss. Absolutely stunning. One final one, a tough one. Do you know when and how this attitude entered you? Has this always been with you? Has it been from your parents or from the way you were educated? Or has there been a magic moment when you suddenly had a powerful thought coming your way. When did you adopt this powerful mindset?
It's a great question. It's a hard one. As long as I can remember, I've always enjoyed being around groups of people. It's interesting. One of the things, I went to school as an engineer, and as I was thinking about what kind of careers to go into, many of my colleagues or fellow students in engineering were working on engineering projects, but I wanted to do things with groups of people. I wasn't in the labs. I was in groups of people, volunteering for teams. And what became very apparent to me is I value the social interaction of people, and that's the way I learn best, not just sitting and reading, learning from other people. And that probably does go back to my parents were very supportive. They were achievement oriented. So when you did well, they were reinforcing of that. And so if you want to do well, and if it's not about whether you do it yourself, but whether you can cause the right thing to happen, then you just learned, how do I do that more and more and more? And if that got reinforced by my parents, by my teachers, and by my peers, then it became exciting. My first job was at an amusement park. And I started out as a ride attendant at an amusement park.
Okay.
And then after a few years, I was promoted to be the foreman. So you're 17 years old and you've got a group of people you're responsible for operating a cable car or some other car. Yeah. And we said, how do we get to a record in the number of people we can have through our ride safely? And then you get recognized. And then you want to do that more and more on a bigger and bigger scale. And in P&G, I had a chance to work with teams, whether it's a production team, we wanted to have production records, but be safe and have low cost, to marketing teams that, you know, how do we grow household penetration and share? But it's about collective achievement and collective celebration. And if that motivates you, then P&G or big business is a great place to be, because you can work with teams of high quality people with the opportunity to make a real difference in the lives of people you care about. That's motivating.
Awesome. David, thank you very much for this stunning interview. It was fascinating to listen and to listen to your thoughts, to your experience. I'm 100% sure that our Lightwolf podcast listeners will absolutely enjoy this interview. So thank you very much for your time, for your perspective. It's truly been a pleasure to listen. Thank you, David.
But thank you very much. And certainly I enjoyed our chances to work together and I benefited from them. So it was with great pleasure that I joined you today.
Great. Thank you, David.